Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Any problems with the jet lag so far?
It affects you during the race, but I usually get on like wherever I'm going that time zone pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. So I feel good now, especially since I'm starting to wake up anyway, but it's when I go home that it's worse. Yeah. Because then you have the two trips in like a week and your body just can't adjust that quickly again. So usually I have more of a problem going home, but
you don't do the old Dalai Lama tale that he sits down to meditate just to wait for his soul to arrive.
No, I haven't tried that. So,
well, it's Friday now, so you have 24 hours to meditate, I guess.
Yeah. See if it catches up.
Welcome to episode 15 of the Husky International series and a long interview with American runner Max King. My name is Magnus Ormestad, and this is the Swedish outdoor podcast Husky. You will find more info about this episode and of previous episodes on huskypodcast.com. Most episodes are in Swedish, but there is a podcast channel called Husky International where I gather all the English ones. So please subscribe to that one or to the Ordinary Husky channel where I publish all episodes. If you listen to this using Acast, you will get additional treats like pictures, links and videos as you listen. And finally, I've had the chance to try out a pair of Bose SoundSport headphones this summer, which is perfect because they're really made for listening while running, biking or whatever. SoundSports are also rain and sweat resistant, so it's really the perfect headphones for all the Husky listeners. And now you have the chance of winning a pair. So please check out the Husky Facebook page for more info about the competition.
But your impressions of because like what I just told you before starting recording this, you are like literally in the heart of what many people would say that Sweden is like. Mora and Dalarna, you know, the red houses,
yeah,
the small Dala horses,
yeah. And just, you know, I don't know, just it's what you think of as Sweden. It's the forest land that surrounds it. It's fairly flat, kind of rolling. The forest floor being very soft and a lot of boggy marsh type areas and stuff in the forest and kind of rural. It's beautiful out here. I mean, with the houses and the little towns in between, you have trails and dirt roads and stuff. And yeah, it's really cool. So yeah, I love visiting areas like this. And that's why part of the reason I love trail running is you get outside of cities and you get to the heart of the country and you get to the heart of the culture being out in an area like this. And it's probably hasn't changed very much in the last 300 years, probably, you know, and I love seeing areas like that and all the history that goes along with it. And it's part of the reason I'm here is just the history of the Vasaloppet and then the course and what it means to the people here and stuff is pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, because we're in the city center and it's like you can really tell it's really built around this.
It is, yeah. Yeah. And some of the towns out there, you know, they're kind of built around the aid stations, basically. And it's cool to see that. And it's cool that the people have, you know, it's part of their history, but it's also a sporting event now. And they really built that into the fabric of their lives, basically. And so it's really neat to see that. And because we don't have that in the U.S. We have races with some history to them, like Western States 100 has an incredible history to it, but it's only, you know, 40 years old. And it's not 500 years old. And that's where, you know, the Vassalapa course comes from, is it's been around, you know, the history of it goes back 500 years. And I mean, that's incredible. You know, that's really cool. And so, you know, that there's a lot of history there. And then the race itself is almost 90 years old. And, so that's kind of gone through a lot of different stages, as far as like how that's been run and how, you know, what it's meant to the people and the history behind it. And now, you know, obviously it started out as a ski race, and it's been that for almost the past 90 years. And now they're kind of weaving that into the fabric of their summer recreational activities, with Cycle Vossen starting in 2009 and now Ultra Vossen and stuff like that. So it's neat.
They're really gonna send you away as the perfect ambassador for Vassalapa.
Well, and that's,
they mentored you.
Yeah. Well, I don't know the history very well yet, but I do need to read more about it. But I know there's a lot there and stuff. And that's part of the reason why I went to Comrades. You know, you hear about Comrades as far as like, you know, okay, so it's been around 90 years. There's tons of history behind it. There's been a few Americans that have run it. Alberto Salazar won it, and he's been the only American that's done that. And then you get there and you realize how big of a deal it is for the people of South Africa. And for the most part, not that many foreigners run that race. It's, you know, out of 23,000 people, 18,000 of them are from South Africa, which is just incredible when you think about the people of South Africa and how really running is probably not that much a part of their lives on a daily basis. But you get this race and the history behind it, and that forms it forms the fabric of like what people are shooting for every year as their challenge, as their goal. And then you get 18,000 people from this relatively small country doing this race. It's just incredible. And everything's built around it. And it just, the whole year is a build up to this one race. And that's pretty cool.
You participated for the first time in Comrades.
Right. Yeah, that was the first time I'd done that. Mm. So. But I love those types of races. I mean, there's got to be something that's going to draw you to a race. And it could be the course is spectacular. The competition is good. Or for me, like the history of a race really plays into it a lot. And I love races with that type of history behind it. And that's a big draw for me.
But had you heard of Vassalapa like prior to coming here?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's not a lot, because I'm not involved in that ski world. You know, I don't really Nordic ski all that much. I've alpine skied all my life, and living in Bend, Oregon, we have a pretty good ski culture going back quite a ways, not 500 years. But it's a good cross-country ski culture. And so, you know, you live there and you're surrounded by it and stuff. You hear about Vassalapa, and you know, it's a big ski race, and that's about it. You don't know anything else about it, really. Nobody really talks about it that much. And so, you know, it's this big ski race that's in Europe, and a lot of the ski racers, they go over for it maybe every year, and it's a big one, but that's about it. You know, you don't know a whole lot about it. So,
but where is home for you now?
Bend, Oregon. So we're on far west coast of the U.S., right above California, basically. That's, you know, a lot of people in Europe are like, where's Oregon? And I'm like, well, it's on the west coast. And they're like, but there's Washington, and then there's California. And, you know, I'm like, yeah, we're squeezed right in there, right in between those two. So, yeah, we're just kind of right in there. Bend is right in the center of Oregon. It's actually quite dry there. We're up in the mountains. We live at about 1,200 meters, which isn't particularly high, but
For Sweden, that would be high.
Right,
it's incredibly high.
And so we're kind of on the rain shadow side. So everybody thinks of Oregon as being really wet and very very green and stuff. And we are the exact opposite. We're in the high desert. One half of town goes up toward the mountains, and it's ponderosa pine forest. And it's, you know, that part of the town is green and it's forest and stuff. And the other side of town is very dry. It goes out into the desert and has sagebrush and juniper trees and stuff like that.
So but that's where you grew up.
It's not. No, I've been there for about 13 years, but I grew up in Southern Oregon, actually. And then Southern Oregon, spent summers in Sacramento with my dad, but most of the time went to school and everything in Southern Oregon, Medford area, and grew up there.
What was your childhood like?
You know, I don't know, your typical kind of American childhood, I suppose. For part of it, we were pretty rural. We lived outside of town, about 13 miles or so out in the woods, had a couple acres, and basically I spent my days running through the forest, and I loved it out there, and that's really kind of where I grew to love the outdoors and love the forest. And then we moved into town, suburban neighborhood, spent middle school and high school there. Grow up in kind of a suburb in town, play basketball out on the basketball court in the front yard, and play with all the kids in your neighborhood, and then go to school. And
but you've never been kind of an urban kid?
No, I've never been in a big city. Never really lived in a big city or anything like that. So no, for the most part, I try to stay out of big cities.
Sounds like a good idea.
Yeah, no, I mean, I like cities and stuff, and there's a lot of really unique ones and stuff that I've been around throughout, you know, just my running career and running track and cross country and stuff. But it would be hard to live in one. I like smaller areas. So
the more pickup trucks, the better.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's that a little bit, and I think it's the little bit more wide open spaces. People tend to be friendlier. I like being in a town where I know everyone. Mm-hmm. I think is part of it, and I like being part of that fabric of the community and being involved with it and having people know me and me knowing other people, and it's always nice when you're in somewhere in a town and you can go to the grocery store and you know most of the people in the grocery store. You say hi to them, and it's very friendly, and it's a very intertwined community. Everybody knows everybody.
And it's very like a social safety to it. Yeah. This spring I went to Iceland, and I went to a small fishing village, and the family that I stayed with, spent a couple of days with, they had owned their house more than 10 years. They don't even own a key to their house. They never ever lock it. I mean, to me it's... No, it's a nice, yeah. Nice touch.
Yeah, and I like that feeling.
As a kid, what did you want to become when you grew up?
I don't know. I mean, thinking way back, it was kind of like I wanted to be an artist, actually. I tended to draw a lot and everything else. And then as I grew up through high school and stuff, everything pointed me away from being an artist. I was very much into math and science and not creative at all. And so that artistic side kind of, it got focused more into architecture, and then I was going to be an architect for quite a while. Eventually ended up, going to college and architecture, then kind of I realized what it took to be an architect, I think. And it's a lot of work. I mean, not that engineering's not, but architecture is a lot of work. And so I eventually went into engineering. And just using that math and science side, you know, it's like I was definitely stronger in math and science than anything else in high school. And so eventually got into engineering. But yeah, I don't know.
What kind of, still talking about you as a small kid, what kind of role models did you have? Did you have any, like within sports, or did you have anyone that particular that stood out?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think I remember Dan O'Brien, who is track athlete, decathlon, world record holder. He was actually from a very small town, Klamath Falls, about 40 miles away from me. He came to talk to us, and that was after I had started track and stuff, and so I knew a little bit about track, and that was pretty inspiring to just have him come see us in person, and that was you know, somebody that I really looked up to, as well as, you know, your typical sports athletes. Michael Jordan was a huge one. You know, I used to have I had one of the first pairs of Air Jordans, you know, one of those years, and like they were awesome. And you know, I was terrible at basketball, and then that was not something that was going to happen for me at, you know, 5'6". But, Jordan was definitely a big role model for me, and because I was definitely in that era of growing up around that. So,
but as a kid running around in the forest, did you have these like dreams or visions of adventure?
No, I mean, I don't think so. I was always involved in the outdoors. During the summers, my dad would take me backpacking, and definitely outdoors was always part of what I did. I mountain biked a lot. I loved mountain biking, and we went backpacking, went boating, camping, you know, so outdoors was always in there.
It was like a natural part of
it was part of my childhood as of growing up, was definitely being in the outdoors and stuff, and I loved doing that. And but I don't think I had any just ideas that I was going to be this.
Put the flag on some mountaintop or something.
Right, yeah. And I was thinking about that actually the other day, and I realized that as I've gotten older, it definitely has kind of creeped into my life a little bit more. And every time I get a taste of it, it inspires me to do more. And so I start feeling like, oh, I need an adventure. I need to get out, do something epic. And once I do it, I'm like, that was awesome. Now I need to, like, it's like a addiction, and you need to kind of satisfy that a little bit more all the time. And during high school, I was looking through some old photos, and I realized that there's this trail that it's a Jeep trail that goes, it's called the Rubicon Trail, and it goes from Loon Lake, a little small lake up in the Sierra Mountains out in California, goes over to Tahoe. Cross country, big rocks. It's a Jeep trail that's, you know, it's a pretty famous Jeep trail that they use. And I wanted to mountain bike this thing. And so me and my sister and a friend of ours, one summer, we took our mountain bikes up there. And I mean, this is in the era of like...
No suspension.
It was fully rigid bike. It was steel frame. And we tried to bike this thing, and you know, it's like, this was high school, so I was a little bit older and a little bit stronger. My sister was 2 years younger than me, and not exactly like an athlete. She was in cross country and stuff. And we did this, we biked this trail, and it was something that we walked most of it. You know, we were off our bikes, and I loved it. I had a ton of fun, and you know, didn't know anything about nutrition, so we were all hungry by the end of the day, and you know, it was probably bonking, and it was probably a really bad scene. But I remember just like how awesome it was, and like for that period of time, it was totally epic for me. And so that was one of those first tastes of that adventure lifestyle, and going, you know, taking yourself on your own two feet and going from point A to point B. And every year that gets to be a little bit more now.
And now if you're going to spend some time with Kilian, you never know where you will end up.
I know. And that's what's awesome. It's like now being on the Solomon team is like, okay, I get to hang out with Kilian once in a while. And I think it could be fairly epic. So yeah, that's what I'm hoping for actually, is some pretty good adventures. And I haven't actually gotten to hang out with him too much. He's been off doing other things this year, but I'm sure that we'll hook up at some time and get to do something fun.
But the sports side, does it run in your family? Like when you entered like running, because the first running you did was like tracks.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. I started out in track. And it was more of a natural progression into track and field of me just knowing that I was a better runner than any other sport. I was terrible hand-eye coordination. Basketball was awful. But my dad did run. My dad ran in high school and college. And by the time I came along and got into my running career, he was not running anymore. But at the same time, something he always talked about.
He still had the shoes on the wall.
No, he didn't actually. It was long enough that, you know, didn't have the shoes on the wall either. But definitely something he talked about, you know, and it was something that I knew about his background and probably helped kind of steer me that direction, I would say.
But it was the sport itself. It wasn't kind of a certain vibe around the running crowd or something that draw you into it, like kind of a social part of it?
No, and it was very not part of my life at that point in seventh grade. The town where I live, you know, running wasn't a big part of anything. And it was mostly baseball, basketball, football, that sort of thing. Kind of a blue-collar town. It was just that I played all those other sports, and I was terrible. I remember going out in seventh grade for the basketball team, And I got cut from the A team. I got cut from the B team. There were enough of us left over that we formed a C team, right? And the A and the B team played all the other big middle schools in the area. The C team, we got put in a league with all the other very, very small Christian schools in the area. And we lost every single game that year. I remember one game we had, and we lost the game 60-3. But I made the three-pointer.
Oh.
So I kept us, was, I kept us from being a scoreless.
It was because of the Jordan shoes,
yeah,
probably.
It might have been, actually, yeah. But, yeah, that's how bad we were and how bad I was. But the good thing about it, though, is I was fast at that time. So I got to play the entire game. I was terrible with the basketball, obviously, but I got to run up and down the court, and I'd get somebody to follow me, and I'd just wear them out. You know, I'd just wear them out. I'd keep running until they were worn out, and then they'd send somebody else in off the bench. I'd wear them out until they got tired, and then eventually I'd be open, and they couldn't follow me anymore. So I got the ball a lot.
But when it came to running, did you have like at an early stage, did you have some kind of vision or goal that you were aiming for or striving for?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think I don't remember too much about it, but I do know I've always been fairly competitive, and winning actually makes a difference to me. And so I did get a small taste of that, you know, in seventh grade, starting right out. I knew from PE and stuff that I had some running talent. I'd beat everybody in the PE mile and stuff. Getting right into track and field, that first year, basically as far as we could go was the district championships, which was all the middle schools in the area. And I won the 3,000 meters in that first district championships that I'd ever run. So I knew right off the bat that, hey, I had at least a little bit of talent coming in, that I was going to be able to do pretty well in this sport. And then, you know, it kind of just continued on from there. So, yeah.
Do you remember if you had a certain point or phase or something where you started to define yourself or identify yourself as a runner?
Yeah, I mean, definitely in high school, I was a pretty shy kid until high school, basically, or midway through high school, when the success of running helped me come out of my shell and really gave me the confidence to talk to people and to be confident in social situations. And I think that's probably, you know, what helped. I don't know if it defined me as a runner per se, but it definitely helped my confidence, and it kind of made me who I am today, I guess you could say that. I mean, it's kind of, since high school, has defined what I've always done in my life. Up to this point. And for a long time, it was tough. Like, I didn't want to be defined as just a runner, you know. But now I'm totally comfortable with it. I'm a runner. So, and I'm fine with it, you know. It's like, yeah, okay, my life is defined by what I've done. And now I've made it to the point where everything that I do is surrounded by running. It involves running. And I'm very much defined. My life is very much defined by running.
So. Did you have, but like, from your high school days, maybe, did you have any like good or bad experiences that kind of affected your path in either way? Like, closed any doors or opened any doors? Like coaches or experiences or?
Well, going into college, actually, I wasn't sure I was going to run as I went into college, just because. So I was totally focused on academics. I knew that I was looking for a college that had either engineering or architecture. And I knew that was, you know, the direction I was going to go. And I had no aspirations of being a professional runner at that point, or even running after college. I kind of thought I would run in college. So I was looking for a school. I got recruited by a few schools and stuff. But I still wasn't really sure that was what I was going to do during college until I got there and started running with the team. And it became something that I connected with right away in college. But in high school, there were times where I really just did not enjoy running. I was doing it just...
But that was still just tracks.
I was doing track and cross country at that point.
Okay.
So I was doing both, and running pretty much year round. I swam my senior year, so I was doing something. But it was more about winning than it was about training, about running, about fitness, about enjoying the lifestyle. And I really didn't like it. Every day I would go out, and I had a really nice coach. He was great. Just didn't really know how to coach a runner. Every day I would go out, run as hard as I could, no matter what it was. It was supposed to be an easy run. I'd run as hard as I could. And basically, I mean, kind of burnt myself out. Definitely did not reach the potential that I could have during high school. Didn't do as well my senior year because of that idea that I had to go hard every single day. And just didn't know any better at that time. And so I didn't like running because of that. I thought it felt hard. And I was just going after the glory of winning at the end of the year, making it to the state meet. And so didn't really like running. It wasn't as social for me until college, when there were people that I could run with, and easy runs became easy, hard workouts became hard, and you got to go through these workouts with other people and feel their pain with them. And that's what kind of binds a team together and creates friendships, is that hard work that you have to go through together and stuff. And I got that during college. And that's when running became more of a lifestyle choice for me and stuff. And then every year since then, after college and stuff, it's become more and more of that lifestyle choice and that social outlet for me. All my friends are runners, that sort of thing. You know, the people that you hang out with are runners, and it becomes ingrained in everything you in everything you do.
But at what point did you kind of start to think that it could be a possible way for you to become a sponsor, like a pro runner, a pro athlete?
Not until much later. I took a couple years after college. College, I was not thinking about that at all. You know, I was decent my senior year, basically, and that was the first kind of taste that I had of really being a little bit better on like a national scale, but still not quite there. Took a couple years off after college. Jumped back into it about 2005 into the running scene, and immediately started at a level that was far above where I had ended college, and attribute that to a lot of different things. But started at a level that I hadn't hit during college, and so automatically I was a lot better. And that kind of opened a lot of doors for me to be on teams, get some sort of financial help. But at the time I was working a full-time job, and didn't really have any thoughts of changing that until about 2006 or 7. And at that point, started putting more effort into the running side of things. The job kind of took a backseat in 2007. I actually moved to Eugene for about a year and a half to be on the Oregon Track Club and to actually just train full time and see what I could do in the 2008 Olympic trials. And so did that. That was a great experience, a terrible end experience. Like the 2008 Olympic trials just went terrible for me. So went back to work for two more years while still continuing to run a little bit. At that time, because of that year and a half off, then I was thinking about, how do I get out of this? How do I make running work for me, and how do I make it a lifestyle choice? And so I was looking for that extra piece of the puzzle. I was winning races and stuff, and having some success with some prize money and stuff, but not enough to make my wife happy and to quit my job. So I was looking for that extra piece of the puzzle. And in 2010, a job opened up for a sales rep for a shoe company. And I talked to our local specialty running store. The owner was a friend of mine. And I said, hey, I'm looking at this job as a possible way to get out of engineering and to go into more running related stuff. And he's like, trust me, you don't want to do that. Come work for me. I will, you know, I'm going to give you the footwear buying position, and you can do that and see how you like it and just let things roll from there. And so that's what I did. It opened up that piece of that pie that was going to let me have enough financial support that I could actually make running a lifestyle. And so did that. And that was about 5 years ago now. And so fairly, I mean, I've had kind of a backward progression as far as like the professional athlete would go. You know, most of them come right out of college, get a sponsorship, and then eventually that kind of tails off at the end of their career, and I've totally gone the other way, had a full-time job and a real job, and then kind of, you know, and I've been getting out of that, and now I'm just, the ball's kind of just, it keeps rolling for me, which is great. So.
Was that progress or that transition, was it somewhat of a scary transition at some point, or was it just follow? I mean, you just had to follow your heart, like you really, you owed it to yourself or whatever, that you really had to give this a shot, or was it so it was all natural for you, or was it sometimes a bit like what the hell am I doing, like leaving this job and this paycheck or whatever? Or
it totally was, and you don't just quit a good engineering job in a town like Bend, Oregon, where it's hard to find a job in the first place, but a good job is like impossible to find. You just don't do that, you know? And so I got a lot of kickback from my family, obviously, you know, like, what are you doing? Don't do that. So yeah, it was really hard to make that decision, but I felt like at the time that was where I wanted to go. It was, you know, it's kind of one of those things where, okay, I was actually doing pharmaceutical engineering, research and development. And you kind of feel like, okay, so there's a ton of things that we were working on that were very, very helpful for people. You know, working on diabetes medications, cancer medications, any of those sorts of things. And we'd get something in every once in a while, and it would be something that I just didn't feel comfortable working on for a condition that would be just go out and run and it's going to take care of itself. You know, one of those types of things where, you know what, instead of popping a pill, get off your butt and go exercise, and it's going to fix a lot of those problems that you're having. And so I got to the point where, okay, so I was in kind of that preventative or the reactionary care side of things. And I thought, well, you know what, I feel like for myself, I can do a lot more good trying to inspire people, helping them on the other side of it, and doing the kind of the preventative care side of things by working in a running store, inspiring people through my running to get out there and do something and to make their lives better through exercise rather than popping a pill, you know? And so I was torn between the two, but at the same time, I really felt like that was the direction I needed to go in order to make that, make it easier for myself, and that was something that I an argument I really used to make that transition a little bit easier and a little bit smoother and make it not quite as hard for myself, you know.
But is that life behind you? Like, you closed that door, or is it just on hold? Or do you know?
I don't know totally. I feel like it's
that question, by the way, is was sent to me by your family, by the way.
My family, yeah. Okay. Yeah. No, they know what I'm thinking there. No, I actually, that is behind me as much as it can be, I think. Is it something that I would never go back to? No, I mean, I totally would if the right opportunity presented itself. And because I love that side of who I am, of being an engineer, of working on complex problems and stuff. But I also see the ability to do that in the industry that I'm in now, in the running industry. And every day when somebody walks through that door in the running store and I help put them in a pair of shoes, I'm using my engineering background to figure out exactly what the right shoe for them is. And basically engineering is problem solving. And that's what I'm doing every day. And so I don't get paid quite as much for it, but it's the same sort of thing. And I feel like if I can help somebody get into a pair of good running shoes that's going to make them comfortable, then they're going to like running more than they have in the past, then I've done my job, and I feel like I've helped somebody as much as I used to when I was doing pharmaceutical research. And that's part of, I don't know, that to me is really cool. So,
why do you think that this kind of, trail running trend / adventure trend, why do you think it's so popular right now?
I don't know. I mean, I think there's a lot of different reasons why it's growing really, really quickly. I mean, people are concentrated in cities you know, and we're talking very broad here, but people are concentrated in cities around people all the time and very artificial man-made surfaces. And I think it's like trail running is different. It gives them an outlet to get out in the, into nature and to really feel what it feels like to be disconnected from the rest of society and stuff. And that's my 5,000 foot like general overview of what trail, why people trail run. But because there's honestly, there's a ton of different reasons why people do it and stuff. And why I do it is very different from why somebody living in a city would do it and stuff. And, you know, I don't know, for me, I love being outdoors. I love being out in nature and I feel more free and, I just feel better out there, you know. It's I enjoy both. I enjoy running on tarmac and on the track and everything else, but I enjoy running out in the woods as well. Part of that is just because I just enjoy running.
Thinking from your running background, I mean, did you see it coming? Like I don't know, 10 years ago or something. Did you see this boom coming? Would you have believed it?
Oh, yeah, I mean, I would say like, yeah, I mean, you look at other sports and stuff like that and how big, like how fast and how big mountain biking got for a while. I think so. People need that outlet. And for the most people, most people are running for the sake of fitness, for obviously being outdoors and doing something. And what we've seen a big boom in is the racing side of things. But most people out there aren't really racing. A lot of people are, yes, but a lot of people are out there for the social side of things and for fitness and stuff like that. And they do races as a goal to shoot for, to give themselves somewhere to go, to challenge themselves. It's something that people are looking for, that next challenge, and trail running is kind of that next step after they've been on the road maybe for a 5K or something like that. Now they're looking at, okay, they've done a 10K, they've done a marathon on the road. Okay, now I need something new. And that's why specifically the ultra running boom, I feel like, has gotten so big. It's like there's a lot of people just doing 5Ks and 10K trail runs, but the bigger, I think, more of the focus, I think, has been on that ultra side of things, and people are looking for that next big challenge too.
You see any other trends in running? Maybe you don't even think about it.
No, I mean, I do. It's tough to see other trends coming before they're here. You know, it's like that's the idea behind a trend, is that it starts slow and then it just builds momentum until it's big enough one time. They're like, that's a trend. No, but I mean, obviously, like a really easy one to pick out right now is just the maximal cushioning shoes. I mean, who saw that coming? Everything started to trend toward more natural, minimal, and then boom, on the backside of the minimal movement comes this maximal shoe movement. And, you know, working in a running store, that is one of those things that just totally stands out to you. But I mean, you know, who knows? I mean, like in the U.S., over here in Europe, not so much. It's not as much of a boom right now as it is in the U.S., but skyrunning is starting to become that trend in the U.S. And it's interesting to me that people need something so technical and so hard for them to feel like they have a challenge. And this gets at an issue that really frustrates me, actually, is that people need something that is longer in duration or longer in distance to feel like they're challenging themselves, when that 5K, 10K trail race, you know what they need to do to make themselves, to challenge themselves? They need to run fast. For me, that frustrates me, because I like running fast. And for me, it's something that I've worked on for a long time, coming from a track and a road background. Obviously, that's what you do. You try to get faster at these events. You don't just go up in distance and keep the same speed. You try to get faster at a given event. And a lot of the trend is to go longer and longer in trail races, where, you know, I think there's some some value in trying to go faster on at a 10K or a half marathon too.
But you know, the status updates on Facebook, they get, you know, a lot sexier with the sky running part.
They do. I know. It's the photos. I know.
Of the selfie.
No, and I think that is part of it. It's part of that aesthetic of sky running and stuff, of being up high in the mountains and these huge, beautiful ridge lines and how epic the adventure was and stuff. I totally get it. I mean, and that's what I love. And if I have to pick a race based on that side of it, I definitely would pick a sky race. I love doing them, and it's that aesthetic to them. I would much rather run a sky race or a sky, you know, that kind of a course for training. For me, because I'm better at it, obviously. I have some bias, yes. I'm better at a flatter race, and so I like racing something that's going to be flatter because I'm better at it. And that's, you know, that's obviously a bias because I'm better at it. But, you know, I think the sky running side of things, I'd love that side of things. I'd like those types of courses better. So.
Because you are kind of famous for, like, because you're active in so many different disciplines. Do you get on a kind of an outside perspective of each of these disciplines, like outside perspective of trail running and ultra running and like marathon running, or is it healthy, do you think, like mentally, to kind of escape this trail community to just go run like tarmac and then you go just run asphalt? Or something?
I don't know if it's healthy or if I need that outlet or not. I kind of feel like I would say I don't know if it's necessarily an outside perspective as much as it is an inside perspective.
You get the both.
I get the perspective of being a road runner, and I get to get the perspective of being a trail runner. And I like having my fingers in a lot of different things. Mm-hmm. And that's why part of why I've kind of positioned myself where I have in my career of having my hand in the development side of shoes, of selling shoes on the retail side of things, of working with marketing people in sponsorship. And then, you know, I just like having my hands in things. And so, like, that's why I do a lot of these different events. So something new pops up, I want to kind of try it out. I want to be part of it. So, but I always like to also go back to what I've been doing before and still be involved in that community. And so that's why I like, you know, I've gotten involved in the trail community, and then it was the ultra community. And I feel very much a part of all of that now. But I also like to go back and get in the roads too. I mean, for a couple of reasons, you know, just socially, I have friends in road community and track community. But also because I still enjoy that side of my running life, and I still enjoy running fast on a track, and I enjoy running fast on a road. And so I still want to be a part of that and stuff. And it's interesting that I can have that kind of perspective of being on the roads and then being on the trails. And I don't know if that makes it any better or anything else. It's just what it is. And yeah.
But is it a big, or is it any difference between the like the running communities from these different disciplines? Like,
he's
a typical road runner. There's more facial hair in trail and ultra.
There's way more facial hair, and I'm trying to grow this mustache right now, and I'm failing miserably because this has been like 2 months, and obviously you can't see this, but it's been like 2 months. But I have this little peach fuzz on my upper lip. And it's really sad, but I can't actually grow the facial hair that's required for me running ultras, you know? So I'm not really an ultra runner. I don't know. There's definitely differences between that road community and the trail community, for sure. Culturally, you go to a trail race, it's much more laid back. It's much more just a different kind of scene than a road race is. And that kind of, I would say that translates over to the elite side as well. The elite side of things at a track or a road race is higher strung. I hesitate to use that side of things because I have friends that are totally laid back in their normal lives and stuff. But yes, it is a little bit more type A, and it's a different feel to it than it is in a trail race. And there are differences. It's really hard to kind of put your finger on it and actually put it into words, I guess. But yeah, you go to a trail race and a road race and you feel that difference in those two cultures.
Are there any tendencies to kind of, that people brand like trail runners, for instance, as kind of a more of a lifestyle sport? And it's not so serious, like those athletes are not that serious as roadrunners. I'm just guessing now.
So. Yeah, no, I mean, I think trail runners probably kind of tend to put themselves on a pedestal because of that, you know, but no, I don't think so. I mean, roadrunners, that is their lifestyle. They run, they just happen to run on different surfaces. And it's a little bit different culture, but that can be very much their lifestyle, and that's what they do after work. That's what they do. Just the same as a trail runner, you know, most people are going to have a real job and they trail run after work because they have the access to it, as opposed to, you know, somebody that lives in a city has access to roads a lot easier. And so it's very much the similar type of thing of that's what they have available to them, and that's what they do. And that's kind of how, that's the way I see it. Whether that's the same for everybody, I don't think so, but yeah.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Like I said earlier, you're called a Renaissance man because you master so many disciplines, and also because you're sitting before me draped in velvet with a big like feather in your
hand. Oh, absolutely, yes, yeah, absolutely.
With like a skull, like
my scepter here, yeah, exactly. My crown.
But why do you think that suits you? Is it like a first prize in like a gene pool lottery, or is it like a mental part of you that's kind of I don't know.
I like we were talking about earlier with the history of things, yeah, and tradition and stuff. I like tradition. For whatever reason, I'm nostalgic, I guess. And while I was not around in the 70s, although people may think I am, I'm getting older now, but I was not around in the 70s when the whole running boom took off. But back then, you hear stories about guys who, you know, as things were taking off, a lot of the elite guys, they're very laid back, is kind of comes to mind. But it was one of those things where they showed up maybe the night before, they slept in their truck, and then they jumped out the next morning, ran a race. And these were very elite Olympians, and across the board, you know, people did that, and they ran different distances, and they didn't specialize in one particular thing, and they did different things. They might have run on the trails, they might have run on the roads and track and cross country and all of that sort of stuff. And I like that. I like that aspect of it, and I like being free enough to feel like I can do all of that and not specialize in any one particular discipline. And I think a lot of people, a lot of professional athletes have gotten pigeonholed or have been kind of forced into thinking that they need to focus on one particular distance, say the 5K, and that is all that they can do. And maybe they'll jump down to a mile for some speed work on the track. Maybe they'll jump into a 5K road race or something, but it's very limiting. And for me, myself, I mean, they can get away with that, and maybe that's what gets them by and what gets them through, but there's no way I could do that. I would burn out in several months just sticking to one particular event, and I just wouldn't be able to do that. And so that's why I do a lot of these different events and why I jump from cross country to track to an ultra trail race. And I think that's kind of why I get that title, because I don't tend to stick to one thing like they used to, and used to do a lot of different things and stuff.
But do you think that's a mistake that many athletes do, that they kind of fool themselves to think that I can only do this? Would you encourage people to...
Absolutely, yeah. Anybody that I ever talk to, or if I coach them, I do encourage them to do different things and to try different races if they want to. But I think for a lot of people, reaching that next level, and they need to do what they need to do to reach that next level, to reach their goals. And for a lot of people, that may be sticking to one particular event and focusing on it, throwing all of their energy at it. And they can do that for years and years at a time, and they reach those goals, then that's what they needed to do to reach that goal. And I just know that there's no way I could do that. But if that's what you need to do, that's what you need to do. So,
do you ever get the feeling that people get kind of frustrated because they really can't pin you down? They really can't brand you?
I don't know. I don't know if people get frustrated about it. People have tried to brand me all the time now. Everybody's calling me an ultra runner now. It's like, no, I'm not an ultra runner. I've only run 100 miler. Come on. Like, up until that 100 miler, you really couldn't even call me an ultra runner. So I don't know. I don't know if people get frustrated about it or not, but everybody always tries to brand you, you know, but I try to defy that brand. Somebody calls me an ultra runner, I go run a track race.
Could you give any like concrete examples what you bring to promote this lifestyle? Like, what do you bring from one kind of discipline that helps you in another discipline? Like, I bring this from track and I can use this in trail, or vice versa.
Starting out on the trails, I think what a lot of people started to see was that this track guy, this guy from the roads and the track, all of a sudden he's coming over the trail and he's crushing all the trail guys because he's got some speed. It's like, oh, well, they have a lot of speed. They can run trails. They're really fast. So, and we continue to see that too with Patrick Smythe and guys like that, David Laney, who have come over from that track background and then started tearing it up on the trails because they are very fast. But going the other way too, I had in 2012, going into the Olympic trials, I was doing a lot of trail racing at the time. Did mountain running that year, was doing a lot of trail focused type stuff in the fall, kind of leading up to the trials. I did Zagama, which was in, I think it was in April, or I guess it was May, right before the trials. Did like 6 workouts before the trials, jumped into the trials and got 6th, which was my best result in any national championship since 2005 in the steeplechase. And I think what that did was proved it to myself that the strength that I had gained on the trails and running a lot of hills and elevation gain translated to the track very, very well, and gave me just that extra strength and the extra aerobic capacity to do really well in a short distance track race. I felt way stronger than I ever had before, felt healthier because I was because I was running trails and doing a lot more dynamic movements and stuff like that. And while the 3K on the track felt like I was sprinting the entire time, I felt the best on my very last lap, which, you know, normally you're running as fast as you can, and you start to die on that last lap, and that's where I passed the majority of people. I just had a great last lap, and that didn't usually happen to me, and so I think I kind of proved to myself that I could take that strength that I'd gained on the trails in the mountains and translate that into the short distance fast races too.
And what's your take on like obstacle races? Because you've been doing that quite a lot. Huh?
They're pretty awesome. So I've been, I think I've been fairly outspoken about how easy cross country has gotten in the U.S. And just like, I just feel like it's gotten to where it's more of a grass track race and not a true cross country race. And the first time I jumped into a obstacle race, I was like, you know what, that is cross country. That was a good cross country course. If you take out all the obstacles, that just comes down to bare bones, good cross country race. And I think that's what was so much fun about it, was that aspect of, what I've always loved to do, shorter distance, cross country, over varying terrain and stuff like that. It was not a trail race. It was truly like a cross country course. And I think that's why I really enjoyed that first one. And then you throw in all those obstacles on top of it, and it's like, shoot, that just made it way more fun. Like, that's like, that was awesome. I get to carry a bucket up a hill, come back down, throw it down. I get to walk across a balance beam. I get to run through a big old mud pit and, you know, jump over logs and everything else. It's like, I love that sort of stuff. And I've been doing that in the woods. Every time I run, you know, run through the woods, it's like, that's an obstacle course. And so now I'm just, you put a name to it, you put a start line and a finish line there, and now I get to do what I love to do. And so it was just a ton of fun. And that's why I continue to do them, and especially focusing on the ones where they are a little bit more running related. The obstacles, they're not so like strength based. Obviously, I'm not going to train for those strength based obstacles because of my running career, and so that's why, you know, I don't mind. I like doing some. I'm not going to run up to some obstacle where my weight is limiting my ability on that particular obstacle, where if I weighed 200 pounds, yeah, I'd be better at it. But it's not so much how strong you are. It's how much you weigh. I don't necessarily agree with that, but those ones where, yeah, I got to carry a bucket or a sandbag up a hill, it's like, yeah, that's just hard work. And it's cool. It's fun. It's like, yeah, that's, I'm using some upper body strength. I'm using full body mechanics and functionality. It's like, yeah, that's cool.
It's a good day.
I'm down with that. It is. And it's a lot of fun. So, I'll definitely, you know, throw down with that other crowd. And that's another thing that makes it so cool. It's like, you're out there with this whole other group of people that are never going to ever show up to a running race. And obviously, I'm talking about the CrossFit crowd. You can put a name to it, I suppose. They're obstacle racers. They're doing CrossFit. They're strong guys. They're big guys who can run as well. It's just they're not going to enter just a running race. But it's a totally different crowd. But you get out there and you're like, you know what? These guys are really cool. And a lot of runners, they look at the gym guys and they're like, oh, I would never do that. And they're just a bunch of meatheads and stuff. It's like, no, it's like they're the exact same culture that I see in trail running or even road running. Same culture. They just wouldn't show up to a running race. And so you never really get to see how cool that culture is and that side of things. And so that's been another really interesting side of the obstacle racing is you show up and you're out there with these 200-pound, like, beasts of guys who their arm is as big around as your leg, and you line up on the same start line with them, and you guys take off, and you're in the same race, and you're competing head-to-head with these guys, and they're obviously going to catch you on when you're carrying a bucket up a hill and struggling. They run right by you, but some of these guys can really run, too, so it's awesome. It's cool.
It seems like many profiles, like, especially within trail running, they become more or less like rock stars, like portrayed as, if you look at the movies and the ads and everything, it's very similar to like backcountry skiing, for instance, especially in the US, I think. Why do you think that is? Is it the photogenic? Because of the nature?
Yeah, I think it's a lot of it's... like why some of these guys, some guys kind of get that rock star type persona is just because it's a lifestyle that a lot of people want to emulate, I feel like. And people who have a family and a full-time job, and they look at a trail runner who's out there living out of his truck and a very nomadic type lifestyle, they're like, oh, that looks cool. I want to do that. And then it looks very freeing and stuff like that. And it's something that they could could change their lifestyle to match that. But like myself, it's just not something I can do. You know, it's like I have a family. I have a wife and a house and everything else. I look at guys and they're out there and just running in the mountains every day. It's like, oh, how cool would that be? You know? And I think that's probably why they kind of get that persona, is because they get to live that lifestyle that a lot of us kind of look at and we're envious of. So, I think that's probably part of it. Maybe.
Do you ever think of the brand Max King?
The brand Max King? Yeah, I mean, sure, a little bit, but I don't know. Is it a brand?
I don't know. But I mean, is it like this social media part of the job? Is it a fun part, or is it kind of a, well, you know, I have to?
Yeah, like part of that is, it is a job. And but I think it's something that people kind of need to hear, that our lifestyle is not, we just go out and run in the woods and come back and whatever, you know. It's like, yeah, this is a job for us. And I know people don't always want to hear that either. They think that takes away a lot of...
keeping it real.
Yeah, keeping it real, I don't know, just how it used to be and stuff. But you have to look at what people are doing in the sport now and why they're being paid for what they love to do. And I think that's really cool that people get paid for what they love to do. People have been trying to do that all their, you know, their entire lives. I mean, everybody tries to do that, right? Get paid for what they love to do. And there's a lot of facets to being a sponsored athlete that people wouldn't want to do. And yeah, we get to run every day and it's cool, but we have a lot of other obligations and stuff that people wouldn't be willing to do. It's like you take a recreational runner, and they have a full-time job and they run for their fun, for their hobby. But I think if a lot of those runners, the people that have the full-time job, if they looked at running as what they actually had to do for a living, they wouldn't want to do it anymore. You know, they do it as a hobby because it's fun for them as a hobby and not as a job. A lot of people think that they might, but they, when they actually got to that point and made it a job, they'd find out that, you know what, it's not always easy, like having the pressure of having to do well at a race or make some money in a race in order to put food on the table, or having to always keep up with all the social media, stuff like that, that side of things, and having to run and just having to run every single day and having to run 100 miles a week or 120 a week or whatever it may be. It's like, then it becomes, you know, it's more of a job for a lot of people and not as much fun. But I truly enjoy what I'm doing, and to be paid for it, I feel like I'm very, very fortunate. And I don't want anybody to really see that as me taking anything for granted or where I'm at in my life, me taking that for granted, because I absolutely don't. I'm so fortunate that I can do it. I do have to do those social media posts, make videos. I have to invoice, things for my expenses. I have expense reports. I am the marketing director, the production manager, the accountant for all that I do. And so it becomes, you got to do all those parts of it. Otherwise it doesn't work. So
where do you get your inspiration for all of this?
I think going back to what we were talking about earlier, it's just being able to inspire people, being able to you know, obviously I love doing what I'm doing for myself as a personal goal. I love competition. I love competing. I love running and being out there and being fit for my own lifestyle. And I would do it even if it wasn't my job. But I also love that other side of trying to inspire people to make themselves better, to be out there, to be fit. And that side of things too. And that's a big reason why I do it.
How important are the surroundings when you're out like racing, running, training?
You mean as far as like the aesthetics of where I am?
Yeah, like the nature, like the feeling you get from.
It depends. For training and stuff, it has become much more of an issue in the past couple of years because mostly because I've started doing more trails and stuff, and I go to these beautiful places, and I'm like, oh, I want that every day. Rather, you know, but I live in Bend, Oregon, and it's like I can't really complain because out my door, about 200 meters away, is a trail, and I can go wherever I want to. And so I have that advantage living in Bend, and I can run in a beautiful area every single day. And but then I got to get my road runs in too. So, but I don't know. Changing it up, I think maybe is the best I can give you on that. Changing it up for me makes it. Keeps my motivation going.
It seems like for many of the trail runners, the mountains are kind of a big thing.
Mm-hmm.
Is it the same with you?
Yeah, actually, it's funny. I was thinking about that today. And in Sweden, there's no mountains. I mean, really not in the mountains here. But it's really extremely beautiful. And I love running out here on the forest trails and stuff. And for me, it's less about the mountains for me than it is about the forest. And the Solomon Running TV episode, just to plug this right now, back a couple of months ago, they did a piece on the forest.
They
took out a lot of that, like, okay, this is a Solomon video, and this is the person we're highlighting or the race that we're highlighting. And they just did a segment on the forest. And I really...
It was amazing.
Yeah, it was totally amazing. And I've been to the Redwoods, obviously, and it was a piece that it really struck a chord with me because that's what I love about running is the landscape, and in particular the forest. And so it is probably for me a little less about the mountains and more about the forests. But you know, obviously, I love running in a lot of different areas, but the forest is really cool to me.
But you like. If you look all year round, you also ski a lot, like active winter time.
Mm-hmm.
You do like ski touring or?
Yeah, I've alpine skied all my life actually, and really kind of put that aside for a couple of years there as I got more into running and stuff. Because on the weekends it was like, well, do I go skiing or do I get a long run in? And it became, well, I really need to get a long run in. So skiing kind of took a back seat, and I really stopped skiing for a couple of years, pretty much completely. And I really missed it because I've been doing it all my life, and downhill skiing is a lot of fun. And so, as you know, obviously I got inspired by Killian, doing a lot of mountaineering and ski mountaineering and stuff like that. And I'm like, you know what? I think I could get a pair of AT skis and do some touring, get my workout in, and have a lot of fun on the downhill. And so that's what I did about probably 3 years ago now. I got a pair of AT skis, and I use that as my workout in the winter a lot of times, and it transfers over to running really, really well. It's just like climbing hills and stuff, so the translation there is great. Get a workout in, but then I get to have a lot of fun coming down. So it's awesome, and I love it. Yeah, and it's a lot of fun. So I spend... Not, I wouldn't say a lot of time during the winter, but some time during the winter doing that as well.
Speaking of races, how often do you race yourself, and how often do you race the competition?
The difference there. I tend to race a lot, because I like the competition side of things, and so I race pretty much all year round for the most part. And I race a lot of different things, and I race a lot. A lot of times, depending on my race schedule, it'll be 20 to 25 races a year. Some of those local regional races that are a little smaller that maybe are more of a training run, with some bigger international type or very competitive national races in there. And I think, you know, those it depends on the race of when I'm racing myself versus when I'm racing somebody else. Obviously, I think if it's a competitive race, like one like this weekend, it'll be more of me racing the competition, and the win is what I'm after. Whereas, like, sometimes, yeah, I'll race myself if I'm going for, like, a PR in a marathon or something like that, or if I'm just out for a workout, you know, then it's more me racing myself and stuff. And so it just depends on the race, depends on the situation.
What would you say mainly drives your career? What motivates you?
Oh, that's a tough one. I think if I took any one piece of it out, I think things would probably start to fall apart. You know, I look at where I am now and realize that competition is probably going to become less and less over the next several years, 10 years maybe, 5 years, who knows. But right now, competition is very much in that fold and drives me to better myself, to train hard, to motivate me for races. But on the other side, you know, I also feel a lot of motivation for just the lifestyle that I'm leading in trying to make it better for future generations. So, I mean, that's why I coach a lot of younger kids, high school, middle school, but also try and inspire them to make their lives better through exercise and activity and inspire people to get outside. And that is that side of me that keeps me going every day as far as getting out the door and doing these inspiring things, and inspiring for me but also for other people out in the mountains, being in really cool places. It's like, yeah, if I can get you know, get myself out there and do something really cool in the mountains, get a good photo of it, for example, and post that, it's like, yeah, I'm actually inspiring myself to get out there, but also hopefully somebody else as well.
On a race day, how are you? How do you work on race day?
I kind of shut down a little bit. I'm fairly quiet in the morning before a race or anything. It's tough to kind of, I'm inside myself. I'm talking to myself and thinking about the race and going through that and stuff. So I'm very, I would say, introverted during, you know, on race day and stuff. And I've noticed, though, that it helps if I, right before the race, start talking to somebody, if I really kind of get out of my own head and talk to somebody, joke a little bit, and kind of just breathe a sigh of relief right before the race, then the gun goes off, and then it's race time. And usually at that point, depending on the race, because in an ultra, you really have to mellow out, and you can't be inside and just thinking about the race right off in an ultra. You really have to kind of take a deep breath and let things go and play out how they're going to play out. Whereas in a shorter race, right off the bat, you're very focused, you're thinking about how fast you're going, what your body's doing, you're inside and just going through your checklist of everything that's going on with you, like making sure everything's right and doing what you need to do and stuff. So
but when it is you know, as tough as it gets, when you're almost like hitting the wall, what does your reactor look like your core? What keeps you up and what keeps you going?
I think in the moment it's competition. I think it's the
other guys.
It's the feeling that I'm not as good, that I'm gonna lose. I don't like that feeling, you know. there's definitely people out there who are less competitive that can totally let people go and stuff. And race themselves, but yeah, if there's somebody in front of me, it's about the competition. I don't want to let them go. I don't want to lose, and that's what's kind of keeping me going at the time.
Have you ever like broke down on a race?
Sure, absolutely. I mean, you have those races. You know, you're going to, especially in an ultra when things aren't going right. There's a fork in the road, I guess, when you do start to break down of which direction you're going to go. You're going to be mad at yourself and kind of down on yourself, or are you going to be stay positive and know, you know, know that you did everything you could that day to get to the finish line first or be competitive, and it just wasn't your day. And, you know, you got to remain positive and think about what you need to change for next time, and what you can take from that experience and what you're going to learn from that experience. And I think the people that, runners that choose the other direction, that beat themselves up, maybe that's motivating for them. But I feel like that's gonna tear you down and burn you out faster. If you can stay positive on that other side and learn from that experience, you're gonna grow from that experience and either, hopefully not make that, if you made a mistake, hopefully not make that mistake next time, or just look at it as, hey, it was a bad day. I'm gonna come back, I'm in good shape, and get after it the next time. I think that is a much healthier way to kind of go about that. And when you do break down, and oh man, I've had some spectacular breakdowns since starting to run ultras. In a shorter race, your breakdowns are, they're there, but they're a little less obvious. But in an ultra, man, you break down. And I've had some spectacular days where I remember Sierras and all 2 years ago, I was going in and I didn't feel 100% right. And I think what I ended up being was I was just kind of sick leading up to the race. And I was going good for, 10K or so, got up to the top of the climb. And this was my second Sierras and all. So I'm like, okay, top of the climb, I'm going for it now. I started speeding up and I'm like, all right, my legs are good, I'm going. And maybe like 3K later, I was like, everything started to shut down. I'm like, I am not good. This is not good. And I just felt terrible. And it was such a weird feeling, like, just because
going
it
from
wasn't,
top to bottom.
Well, no, I've done that before. Oh. Plenty of times. It was more about like my body just didn't feel right. It didn't feel good. It didn't feel like I was a normal bonk where I was just losing energy. I was like not feeling good. Went through like an aid station. I'm like, oh, screw it. Started eating the chocolate and the candy and the tea and just kind of making it more of a day out there on the trails than anything. And running, you get up to Weisshorn and you're up at the top of the climb and the views are just spectacular. And I'm like, I'm done. So this was a spectacular blow up. And just, letting people go, walking down the trail the rest of the way. And at one point I was sprawled out in the grass on the side of the trail, just laying there because I felt so bad. And I'm like, oh, I got to make it to the finish line. So I was letting people go by and the women go by, cheering them on because they're friends. And I'm like, go Megan. And she looks at me and she's like, ooh, you're not having a good day, are you? I'm like, nope, I'm done. So, eventually I made it to the finish line. And the post-race party is there and it's fun. And, you just enjoy the time with your friends and know that, hey, the day, it wasn't my day. Maybe I was sick. Maybe I wasn't. Something was wrong. And you just move on.
Just accept it.
You accept it. Yeah. You move on and know that your next race is going to be better. So
what's here's a tough one. your relation to your body. What was it like? Because I can imagine, in your line of work, that sometimes people maybe end up at some points, like, see their body as kind of a tool, I don't know. Are you sometimes, like, I don't know, dislocated from your body, or is it just the opposite that you...
I'm the opposite. I'm very connected to my body. I know what's going on with it. I don't like being disconnected from it. This is an odd question, I guess, because I don't think about this very much, but I do think about like what I'm doing to my body and stuff and how I want, how my mind-body relationship works, I guess. And it's very, very much a mind over matter sort of relationship, I feel like. If my mind's in control of my body, then it's doing what I want it to do. And so I always like that connection, I think. And so I always want my mind to control what my body's doing. And so that's how I try to base everything that I do on my movements, is be very conscious about how I'm moving, what I'm doing, what my body's doing. And to be able to do that, I have to be very connected to my mind. And I guess that might be as best as I've ever put it. or even thought about it, I guess. But yeah, I think it's like having that connectedness is really, really important for me. And
because I can imagine at some point, like, it's like the body is trying to tell you something, like, dude, my kidneys, it's, we can't take it anymore. But then on the other hand, you have your mind, like, you know that you have to push yourself in order to overcome this obstacle, this
right. No, and you're right. I mean, there are, especially in an ultra, there are times where you absolutely have to listen to your body and what it's doing, because if you don't, you're gonna be in trouble. And so there are times where you do need to listen to your body. And there's a quote out there I'm trying to remember, but I like it. It's, in training you listen to your body, in racing you tell it to shut up. And it's perfect. I love that. And it very much resonates with me, because yes, in a race, like, my body starts going to hell and I start dying in an ultra. It's like, I just want to tell it to shut up and just move and keep going. And, you know, a lot of times you just can't, you have to listen to it. It's just shutting down and it's not going to go anywhere. So, yeah.
But is that do you find some certain attraction in the uncomfortable? Like when it's cold, when you have pain, and
I think I'm gonna say yeah, because otherwise I wouldn't do what I do. I don't know if I like it necessarily. Like, I like being comfortable, but I don't know. At the same time, though, I look for that. I look to be uncomfortable, and I like that feeling. I like being uncomfortable, I guess. I just said I didn't, but I guess I do. I don't know. Otherwise, I wouldn't do what I do. It's like, you know, every time I've always come from kind of a background of, I'm always going to be better in adverse conditions. You take a cross country or a track race back in college or high school, if it were muddy, if it were raining, if it were cold, I was better on that day than my competitors were relative to when it was nice. You know, it's that sort of thing. And I still relish, you know, that aspect of being better under adversity than my competition is, and as part of something that makes me a better runner, a better athlete, is being better under adverse conditions, not letting things get to me and bother me.
Where does your mind take you when you're out, like, on the long runs?
Oh, anywhere and everywhere. I like some of those long runs, and I'm not a music person. I don't listen to music out there, because I like to hear nature. I like to hear my footsteps. I like to hear the animals, the trees, the wind, you know, just what's around me, and stuff, and be connected that way. And so my mind just kind of, it wanders a lot. I get a lot of work done actually when I'm out on a run. I think about, what's happening with life, where life's going, I guess my life in particular, and get some work done out there and figure things out for myself and stuff. And that usually tends to be kind of where things are at, is just working on through problems.
Being part of the Solomon team now, what does it entail? What does it mean for you?
Well, it's actually a lot different than I thought it was going to be.
Because it's new from January, right?
Yeah.
From this year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. January was a big change for me in changing teams to the Solomon team. And it's different than I thought it was going to be. It's actually a lot better. And I knew it was going to be good, and otherwise I wouldn't have done it. But it's exceeded my expectations, I guess you could say. And last year, at the end of the year, when I was trying to make this decision, I was looking at a lot of different aspects of the positives and negatives of why I would want to change sponsors, and came down to a lot more positives on the Solomon side of things than I thought it would. And there were things like, okay, I have a big shoe shelf at home with about 120 pairs of shoes. Being a footwear buyer, I have to try everything, right? So I try everything and keep the ones that I really like, and it ended up being, it's close to 120 at any one time. So I was looking at my shoe shelf, and I'm like, well, I've got one from Montrail, and I've got 8 different pairs that I wear from Solomon. It's like, I got a pair for this, I got a pair for this, and I got that pair for this condition. It's like, wow, there's just a lot more here that I can work with, and it's a lot more specific. I was looking at that, and I was just weighing everything, you know, and it came down to, like, Solomon was just clearly, like, a better choice for me, personally, and it's exceeded my expectations in the fact that I went into Advanced Week in March. Every year we get all of the athletes together, product development side of things, and we all come together, collaborate, do a lot of prototyping and testing and stuff like that, and then we all work on the product together. And that was very, very cool for me to see that side of things.
The engineering, just the
fact that they're using their athletes in a way that no other company does for product testing and development. Using what the athletes want and really kind of innovating the new products based on that. And that was really cool. The fact that they listen to their athletes and that they're getting a lot of new ideas from that. Some of them make it to production, some of them don't. And also how much of a family the Salomon group is, the Salomon family. It's like, what was really cool to me, and this is something that I was talking to our US guys about the other day, of the product development side, those guys are a family in amongst themselves. They use the product, they go out on weekends together, and do races and stuff like that, and then they get together with us and we have something to talk about that's in common, because they're all using and doing what we do, and you can't really make a better product than if you're the one using it. And that's really cool to me, and how much of a family the Salomon group is, and everybody, you know, really respects each other as athletes, but as people too, and we all encourage each other to do different things, this particular race, or, you know, cheer each other on in races and help each other out. If somebody, for example, somebody comes to a race, somebody on our team, and they're injured, and they can't race, well, then they're on the sidelines, they're at the aid station crewing for the rest of the people that are racing. I don't think you see that all the time with a lot of other teams. You see a lot of separation and stuff, and the Salomon team is very much about collaboration and getting together and being together as a real team, and I like that aspect of it, and it's been something that I didn't really expect. So
is it difficult to plan your season when your menu is so extensive and so wide?
Yeah, it is, because there's so many darn races out there that I want to do. And it's like, oh, shoot, there's 3 races on that weekend that I want to do. I have to pick one. So, yeah, it's hard, but it's also at the same time exciting to do a lot of different things. And so I'm always trying to weigh, you know, going back to a race that I'd done the year before or going to a new one. It just depends on what the situation is as far as like whether I stay there or whether I go to a new race. And a lot of times over the last couple of years, that has kind of morphed into, all right, I've got to try something different. So I've been doing a lot of different races every year just because there are so many out there and they're all really cool races. I just love doing new stuff, and I want to experience as much as I can.
What are you most proud of?
Like as far as in my running career, I don't
know. To narrow it down a bit, you know, when it comes to running, for instance.
Okay, all right. When it comes to running, I think, I don't know, you know, the one that just pops into mind is like running accomplishment that I'm proud of is the World 100K Championships, the win there last year, and also my World Championship win at Mountain Running Championships in 2011. It's like, okay, that was the pinnacle. Like both of those were World Championships. I feel really good about that. As far as like what I'm most proud of in running, if you include everything with running, like I have kids that are now in high school that I was coaching. I coached them all the way through middle school and helped develop them as far as the athletes that they are today. And, you know, I'm pretty darn proud of that. The fact that I had an impact on their lives and they're still running in high school and they're doing really well. And running is now just a big part of their life. And I'm pretty darn proud of that side of things too. And that's, you know, that's all grouped into the running too. So.
Now you're aiming for Rio, for the Olympics.
That'd be nice.
The marathon.
Yeah.
Because your fast marathon, it was 2:14?
I have a 2:14:30 PR, mm-hmm. and the last marathon was LA Marathoner in a 2:17:30. Barely squeaked under the qualifying trial standard. And so, yeah, I get to run the trials, Olympic trials in February next year in LA. And absolutely, I'm going to make a run at that Rio team. Is it likely? Is the marathon my best event? Nah, probably not. It's a pretty outside chance. I have to look at that realistically. Is it really in the cards that I'll probably be in Rio? No, it's not very likely. But you know what? It's the U.S. Olympic trials, which it's one of the most competitive races in every 4 years, basically. So it's something that I really want to put myself out there and do and be a part of that. And that's the side of me that loves going back into that road running background and tapping into that. And you know, part of it, it's like, well, shoot, I want to see if I'm still fast enough to compete with these guys, you know, and make sure that, hey, I'm on the trails, I'm doing these ultras. I want to make sure I'm not slowing down. And so part of it is a reality check for me. And then part of it is just knowing that that's a really competitive race. I love competition. I want to be there, you know, so.
And how do you feel for Ultravasan tomorrow?
Ooh, Ultravasan's Saturday tomorrow, or not tomorrow, 2 days. I feel good about it. Training's been going well, not necessarily super specific to this type of a course right now.
Because it's kind of a flat, according to you, it's kind of a flat.
Yeah, I would say this is a
according to everyone,
it's kind of a flat. Yeah, it's a flat course, yeah. As far as a trail running course goes, this is a flat course. And so it's particularly fast, pretty good footing. There's a couple of areas that are rooty and rocky, but pretty fast. I've been playing a lot in the mountains and stuff and not necessarily really focused on this particular race format for me. Looking at other stuff later in the year and stuff, feeling like I can go into this race, still do well with the training that I've been doing, but not as much flat stuff, you know, flat, fast stuff. So I don't know. It's like I was telling Brian Powell yesterday, you go into an ultra and you don't really know what's going to happen until at least halfway through the race, and maybe not even then. There's, you know, it used to be that a short distance race, I knew whether I was in shape or not. I knew because based on my training and the workouts I've been doing, like how that race was going to go. But an ultra, I have yet to figure out. And it's like some days are good, some days are bad, and the days leading up to a race, I have no idea how that race is going to go. It's just something that it has to click on that day. Your body has to be into it, and you just don't know. So it's an interesting feeling of not knowing what's going to happen.
At what stage are you now in your life?
I mean, I'm at the stage of like I've gone backwards. As far as a professional athlete goes, I'm a professional athlete after I had a real career and a real job. I have a family with two kids now. I'm very proud of the fact that I've been able to continue being a runner and doing the things that I'm doing and have a family and you know, take care of that aspect of my life. Sometimes my wife would question that, especially right now as I'm over in Sweden for a week and a half, and she's at home with the kids and definitely having some trying times taking care of them. One's 2.5 and one's 6 now. And
it's full action.
It's full on action. And when she's alone with them, it's a lot of work. Yeah. And so she definitely appreciates when I'm home now, I think, which is good. And doesn't like it as much with me traveling, but you know it's part of the job. Just as there's a lot of other dads out there that travel for their work as well, and so it's something that I have to do. And I'm kind of at that point in my life where I've got the family, I've got the kids, and I've got to take care of them. But I've also got this other wonderful job that I love doing, and I want to continue doing it as long as I can.
Sounds good. Thank you so much for taking your time. Good luck on Saturday.
Yeah, thank you very much. Thanks for being here and taking the time.
Find out more at huskypodcast.com. You will also find Husky on Twitter and Instagram at the handle huskypodcast.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.